Welcome back to International House of Combat. Kelly Nelson here, and joined as always on our wild trip around the globe is Steve Willey. How are you doing, Steve?
I am doing well. We are going for a long flight today, and hopefully I'm going to leave the middle seat open between the two of us, and hopefully we'll have enough room and some good social distancing.
Yes. Yeah, we're going, if we had to fly from North America to this, well, both destinations, it would be quite the journey. Definitely a trip that I've never taken before on a plane, or that lengthy of a trip. So yeah, we're back. We were off last week, but we're back again, and we're resuming our journey. We're trying a different country first up that we haven't explored yet, and I don't know how often we'll explore in the future, because it's a country where the footage is pretty sparse, and there's not a lot of lengthy matches, or basically no lengthy matches out there that I'm aware of. But it's a country nonetheless that has a rich history of wrestling, and at its peak in the 60s and early 70s was one of the top places in the world for wrestling and attracted the top names in wrestling. So first up, we're going to the land down under. We're going to Australia. And specifically, we're going to a promotion that had the initials WCW and was in fact called World Championship Wrestling, but had nothing to do with the future and more vastly more well-known, at least in North America, WCW. The history, I'll get into a little bit here before we go in. I'm just going from memory. Basically, the main promotion, or the one that's most well known, WCW in Australia, started about 1964, and it was started by an American promoter, Jim Barnett, who, of course, that's a name a lot of people will know. He was a big promoter in the 50s, 60s. He promoted all over the place in the States, and then he had a chance to promote in Australia, which was wide open, and he went there and made tons of money and was there for the better part of a decade. And then, of course, when he came back, he entered what he's, you know, the run as a promoter that he's most well known for, and that's of Georgia Championship Wrestling in Atlanta. And that coincided with the time that the promotion in Georgia got on TBS and was beamed into homes all over the place. So a very well-known promoter, and yeah, he opened up Australia, and for many years, it was a thriving, booming territory that they were attracting. They ran weekly shows in an arena. I don't know how many different places or cities in Australia they did this, but at least one major city in Australia was attracting at its peak like 9,000-10,000 fans a week, which is unheard of for any promotion in any country anywhere in history.
Sure.
Yeah. So they made a ton of money. My man, Dominic DiNucci, at one point was the biggest star in the country and was a huge draw. He was the guy who was on top when they were doing 9,000-10,000 a week. And then they had all kinds of other huge stars from the States come over. Killer Kowalski was a big name there. And yeah, basically a who's who of who was a star in the 60s in North America and into the early 70s too. But the 60s was the true golden age as far as I know. And of course, like the 60s footage in North America, there's nothing out there of Australia in the 60s. So today we're looking at Australia in the 70s, and that's about all I can tell you. the exact dates, I mean, there's some of these matches where we can kind of say the year maybe, but definitely not the month or the day. And even the year is not 100% certain. And this is footage, I think, that was released on DVD, maybe, but I'm not 100% sure. It was either DVD or maybe a TV series from about 10, 12, maybe longer years ago, 15, that basically played a bunch of highlights from the glory days of WCW Australia Wrestling, or at least what had survived footage-wise. So that's what we're going to be looking at today. So, Steve, first up, have you ever been to Australia?
No, the farthest west I've been is Hawaii. Okay. So besides there, not even close. It seems like an awful airplane ride.
Yeah, no, I've never been myself. Yes, I know it's like a 20-hour flight or maybe longer. It's one of the major ones. But I've heard nothing but good things from friends I've known over the years that have spent time in Australia. That it's definitely a must-see country and a place to go. But yeah, the for us in North America, it's just a major, major commitment as far as a flight goes to get there. But someday, I think, yeah, it's on the bucket list. I'll get to Australia at some point. And secondly, Steve, do you have any knowledge or familiarity with the wrestling we're about to take a look at?
The only amount I have is what you just said. And looking at Wikipedia last week when we were looking at the matches. So nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I've read a few things over the years, especially that Meltzer has written when it comes to like an obituary for a wrestler who passed away that was one of the top stars in Australia. Meltzer always will write a lot about that. He always speaks of this era, you know, in with reverence because he's very impressed with how successful they were and how well they were able to draw at their peak. But yeah, outside of Meltzer's obituaries, my knowledge of Australian wrestling history is pretty non-existent.
They seem to have a lot of, like you said, pretty much anyone who's, you know, anyone who's anyone went over there at the time. You know, Andre, Bulldog, you know, we're going to see Bulldog Brawler, Bruiser Brody, San Martino, Dick Murdoch. Oh, yeah. Dennis Stamp. That's the Briscoes.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, it was
quite the list.
Yeah, it was very similar to Japan at the same time and later that would attract a lot of North American wrestlers because they paid awesomely. And then the wrestlers were taken care of really well. They'd be put up by Barnett in like first, you know, 5-star hotels. They'd get first class air travel. They would, yeah, they'd be treated like kings. And I think, as far as I know, like the fan base and the media at the time in Australia treated wrestling, you know, better, so to speak, than in North America, like or your cliched view of how people view wrestling in North America. In Australia, it had a higher status for whatever reason in the 1960s. So, yeah, it was a great place to go and make money at a time when there was, you know, thriving territories in North America, but a lot of places weren't doing so well and definitely not paying as well because they just didn't attract the sheer volume of fans that they did in Australia. So, yeah, it was it's a story that I hope somebody out there writes a history of it at some point. It is definitely a story that needs to be told and disseminated to the to wrestling fans everywhere. So, yeah, we're going to dig into some matches from the 70s. The first two are from, if I had to nail it down, I guess probably between 1972 and 1974, just based on what I've read here and there and what I know of the workers and who was there at the time. So, and then the third match we're going to look at is from probably either 77 or 78. And it features the NWA world champion at the time, Harley Race. And Harley Race is actually the theme for today's International House of Combat. I wanted to have some sort of connection between all the footage. And I first suggested to Steve that we maybe look at a recent match from Australia featuring Will Ospreay and Robbie Eagles, just because I know independent wrestling in Australia in the last few years has kind of gone through a renaissance, like a lot of countries and a lot of areas, and is doing quite well. And I've, you know, I thought, why not? Because there's really, after the 70s Australia wrestling, I know there's some footage from the 80s on YouTube from Australia, that's the actual TV shows. So like the 45-minute, hour-long TV shows from the early 80s. But then by the 90s, I guess WWF would have been maybe running there occasionally. The TV for sure would have been available in Australia, I'm assuming, WWF TV by the late 80s, early 90s. But even then, not that I want to watch any WWF or WWE for this show, but I don't even know if there's much out there that the WWE has filmed from Australia.
When I was looking at a little bit of research for Australia, when Hogan did his kind of infamous tour down under, that was 2009.
Oh,
That was
yeah, right. I totally forgot about that.
hey, we should do that. Randy Jordan.
Damn, I totally forgot.
Nah.
Well, we'll do that in the future.
Yeah, it said that that was the first time that he had ever wrestled in Australia. So if WWF went down there, it was not with him.
Now that you mentioned it, I don't know if they did run shows until the 2000s, because I know they did a big show in 2002 at like a very large stadium, which I believe was headlined by The Rock, Brock Lesnar, and Triple H in a triple threat match, if I'm not mistaken. But I don't know if there's footage of that or not. I know I definitely haven't seen it. But yeah, the Hogan Flair tour, I forgot about that. That was a very bloody tour. Like every match, both guys, I believe, juiced. And that's all I've seen is pictures from that, where Flair in particular looks just horrible. but yeah, we'll have to. I know there is footage out there. I have come across it on YouTube before, but I've never sat down to actually watch it. So hopefully it's still on YouTube and we can explore that someday. 2009, I believe it was. Yeah, the Hogan Flair tour, when both guys were kind of on the outs of, well, all the major promotions at that time, just before Hogan went to TNA, I guess. Oh, well, and Flair went at the same time as Hogan. All right. So yeah, and then I thought, or Steve actually talked me back from the ledge with the Will Ospreay Robbie Eagles match, suggesting that's maybe a tad too modern, and I think he's correct. I mean, I think eventually I'm not opposed to checking out more modern wrestling from around the world for this show, but yeah, no need to jump into it right away. So as a compromise, we decided upon Harley Race versus Jumbo Tsuruta from Japan, I believe 1977, June 1977. And yeah, so that's the theme. We're going to look at Harley in Australia and then Harley in Japan from actually probably right around the same time. Maybe it was even the same like time or tour for Harley out there going from Australia to Japan, because that's definitely there are two countries that are very close to each other. As far as air travel goes, I know that. And yeah, so let's begin with first up, Australia 70s, Mario Milano versus Bulldog Brower. And this should be interesting. It's coming to us in beautiful black and white. And for 1972, that's interesting because most footage by then was color. I know in Canada, in the early 70s, some of the footage from like our national TV station CBC was still filmed in black and white in 1970, 71. So I guess it wasn't totally unusual. All right, well, we'll do the usual 3-2-1 and go. 3-2-1 go. All right, some nice guitar riffs underneath, and here we go. I hate that I don't know who this is that's talking to us right now. I'm sure he was well known to fans of Australian wrestling at the time, but I do not know the man's name.
He has a huge chest, huge arms,
Looks like a, if Richard Dawson was a football player.
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say, I think he's probably somebody that was a wrestler when he was younger, because yeah. he's pretty big, pretty thick. And he's, I believe he's talking about Bulldog Brower right now, steamrolling his way through the United States and Canada. Brower, from what I've seen of him over the years, I mean, most of the footage that exists is when he was quite old and near the end of his career in New York, late 70s, early 80s, and he's pretty bad then. But then, on at the other end of things, I've seen footage of him from 1961 in Calgary, where he didn't wrestle on the show, but he came out and just caused a total ruckus in the crowd and roughing up wrestlers and stuff at ringside, and he totally came across as this madman who he was at his peak, the one-man riot squad, Bulldog Dick Brower, and here he is. Cue Brower as I'm talking about him. The shaky cam that we got going here is interesting. And let's see. So Brower's opponent is Mario Milano, who was, as far as I know, one of the legends of Australian wrestling at this time. He was from Italy, and I believe he started wrestling in the States and wrestled there. Or maybe he started in Italy, but then he went to the States and was pretty big in Tennessee, actually, in the early to mid-60s, but not really anywhere else. And then he went to Australia in 67 and immediately became a huge star. I think, much like DiNucci, he benefited from Australia having a very large Italian population, immigrant population. So he was a national hero, in a way, in Australia. So this is approximately 72 to 74. That's about all I can say about that for sure, about the date. Hangs on in the
corner. I'm guessing a more 72.
Yeah.
Because they were introducing Bulldog before the match, and he was the champion at some point in 72.
Okay. Safe to run around
this fellow. When was Jack Briscoe NWA champion? I need a mention of Jack Briscoe.
Okay, Briscoe won the title in 73 in the summer from Harley Race and held it in almost all the way through 1975. Well, he dropped it to Baba in Japan for a 1 week switch, but otherwise, yeah, 2.5 years. So I didn't hear the commentary. Did they mention that Briscoe was the NWA champion?
I just heard Briscoe. I couldn't tell if he was the champion.
Yeah.
They talked about them wrestling at some point.
Okay. Well, I mean, he may have came over before he was champion, because he was a pretty big star already before he became NWA champion. But anyway, still within the 72 to 74 range. Well, I'll say this for Bulldog. He looks a lot better here than he will in 79-80. I mean, if you've ever seen the book The Heels, or if you own the book The Heels, it's a pretty famous wrestling history book. Bulldog Brower is on the cover of that. He's basically the representation of a heel as far as the book goes. Like, he had a great look as far as like his face. Of like a deranged madman with his eyes, popping out of his skull, basically. Sort of like what he's doing here. He wanted to redeem himself against this chap. So he's doing the old pull him up at two. Not my favorite heel maneuver. Word with a mouse. The
count is one, it's two, and again. Fourth time,
oh God.
The bell is called for. The referee has stopped the fight, or the general, as they say.
What have we got here? Oh, jeez. Power slam on the referee, basically.
The
man has gone
completely berserk. Well, the referee looks like he could fight right now.
Yeah.
He's jacked.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. I was just thinking that before he slammed him. So Milano, for a legend of Australian wrestling, did not look very good there. And Bulldog's managed by Big Bad John, the guy you would see there in the German army helmet. He was, I think he did some managing. Well, I know he did some managing in the States with the army, and I'll explain that storyline later when we get to the next match. But he was a huge, huge manager in Australia, that's for sure.
Could somebody please come and help him?
No, his back is injured. The original announcer is showing a lot of concern.
Yes, no, they're putting this over big time. And it was, what, 4 body slams? even for the 1970s, yeah. that doesn't seem that like too bad. 4 body slams. But in Australia, maybe the body slam was
Better kind protected. Of semi-power slams.
Yeah, I mean, okay, they weren't just straight body slams. But still, it was kind of, yeah. So now we're getting a little post-match here. Considering there's still time in the video. Okay, yes. So we're getting Big Bad John and Bulldog Brower.
What am I going to regret, Layton? You think he's going to hurt somebody, so I'm going to feel...
It looks like a fireman's hat that you would get at a fire station for little kids.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't look quite as impressive as it did earlier when you look at it more closely. I think the interview is Lord Athol Layton, who was a pretty well-known...
Okay.
Wrestler, especially in Canada at one point in the 50s. Big Bad John is calling him Layton.
Layton, yep.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure that's who the interviewer is, and he was British in origin.
Brower is my key. Brower is my key to all.
Brower is his key. Brower is his key. They're calling out Killer Carl Cox.
Oh, yes, that was one of the wrestlers that came in. That's funny that Cox is a baby face here. Usually he was a heel.
Mark Lewin has had
and Lewin was in the ring, too. Mark Lewin, who was a big star at the time and was a huge star in Australia during their peak.
Think about that. Think about Mark Lewin taking all the gravy.
This guy is quite the looker.
Yeah. He's a scumbag. I mean, I can see why he was over as a heel, over as a manager, because he's a guy you just want to see get his ass kicked. You know. And he's got a good rap to him. But Brower was actually not very tall. He is, God, he was stocky. The whole shaky thing here with the editing, I don't know if that was originally presented or if that was something added later for whatever reason.
What do you think he's been down here 8 or 9 years for? Well, I'm going to tell you something, Layton. There's going to be a little reverse on that because Mark Lewin and his little clique is going to bust. It's going to bust wide open. Because
Mark Lewin's clique's going to bust right open. The original clique.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he's alluding to something that I'll get into shortly for the next match. This one's almost over. I was transfixed by his promo there for a moment.
I said that Mark Lewin claims he doesn't like the money, but he's been down there for 8 or 9 years, so what do you think he's down here for?
Okay, so I've paused the next video at 1 second, just so we don't get out of sync. So are you ready to start the next one, Steve?
I am.
Okay.
I'm all set.
3, 2, 1, go. And this is Mark Lewin versus Abdullah the Butcher.
Today is no exception. International.
And now we have Layton again, but he looks maybe younger here. A war match of Mark Lewin. Oh, here we go. Yeah. Picking up where we left off, we got Big Bad John immediately back in. and he's managing Abdullah the Butcher. I'll just quickly explain the situation as far as I know it. A big angle feud in the 1970s in Australia was basically it was I think it was the People's Army versus Big Bad John's Army, and the People's Army was led by this man right here, Mark Lewin. And another member was King Curtis Iaukea, and they were the good guys. And Big Bad John's army was made up of Abdullah the Butcher, the Sheik at one point, Bulldog Brower, I guess, and some other guys. But it was a very bloody, crazy feud that did well in Australia. And it also did well in Calgary and in Detroit and I believe also in Dallas or one of the promotions in Texas, maybe Amarillo. And they would take this feud from territory to territory, have all these bloody matches, make a bunch of money, but because they overdid it with the blood, the fans would stop coming out because they kind of thought, well, we've seen everything. What more can they do? They've had all, you know, all variations of gimmick matches and bloody matches. So basically this feud was successful at first, but then ended up burning out every territory where it was run pretty much. So it's kind of a controversial feud in wrestling history. And it was about, 1974, 75 in that time period. So I think Australia was where they ran it first, and then they brought it to North America. Anyway, the turnbuckles are pillow-sized, and that was something I remember from a match from Australia I saw years ago. It was Harley Race against Rick Martel, and I remember remarking about how huge the turnbuckles are.
Comes back pounding into the side of the head of Abdullah, but I don't think
this looks like every Abdullah match ever.
Pretty much. Just haven't seen the fork make its appearance yet.
He's ripping into Abdullah, punching.
He jabbed the thumb in the throat earlier on.
Yeah, I mean, this was the TV wrestling, so I'm not sure if they would show much blood or any at all. These would be building up for more important match. Just as I say that, well, I mean, he can't help it with Abby. He just bleeds when you look at him a certain way. You don't even have to, doesn't he have to gig himself?
90 seconds into the match, he's busted open for a few punches.
Just from Lewin's fists. Yeah, no, okay. I was about to say, I don't know if they showed much blood on Australian TV. Apparently they did. And Leighton on commentary is selling, this is war, this is war.
Abdullah screaming like a pig, squealing like a pig.
No, jeez. Abdullah squealing like a pig.
Yeah, he is. I mean, this is Abby just before he started getting really heavy. He's relatively slim here. Jeez. I mean, it's not much. It's just a TV match, but it's pretty entertaining.
Abdullah trying to stand up, but the sleeper is on. The sleeper is on, and Lewin is digging in.
Pure dominance.
So most of Big Bad John's, most of his army are all imports.
Yes.
And Abdullah's going down. Look at Big Bad John. But seeing his...
Oh.
John eats the dropkick. Oh, going under the ring for something.
Yeah, it looks like it. Deck is John. I hope he wouldn't be gigging just from a dropkick. You never know, considering how bloody this feud was. Oh!
Over the top, and Lewin has hung himself in the ropes there. Abdullah getting down out of the way. Lewin is locked in. Wallaby.
Oh, this is not going to be good for Mark Lewin.
Now it's Big Bad John and Abdullah. Look, it's Mark Lewin locked in the ring. He can't move. Abdullah.
Head is just, he's getting choked out by the ropes.
Yep.
Pull him away. But they're all...
Come on, McMasters, get in there.
Wallaby Bob trying with all his strength.
Right, and he's, Lewin is now leading.
Look at the way they go in. Come on.
Oh, jeez. Now this, now, you know, the previous angle with the body slams I wasn't too impressed by, but I like this one. This one is something that you would want to pay money to see the resolution of. King Curtis. There's King Curtis. King Curtis is victim to Abdullah the Butcher. Oh, and he just eats the ring post immediately. And he's gigging. I'm glad that, you know, like I explained the whole thing about how bloody this feud was, and I was at first thinking, oh, they're just going to have like a regular match. But no, this is showing that, yes, this indeed was a major blood feud. But again, Abdullah ripping in. And now it's
Mark Lewin, still victim of Abdullah. King Curtis down.
Yeah, Curtis.
I like how Big John essentially took him out.
Yeah. John is holding the legs, holding the legs. This looks like, this was maybe like another referee is slugging. Oh my goodness. Wallaby's fighting for Lewin, but
Wallaby's being picked up. What is going on? John.
Big suplex by John. I thought he was going to DDT him at first. They're all out. Just chaos.
I can't believe the ref started throwing punches.
Yeah, I know. Maybe, maybe he was a former wrestler. Now we got a huge comeback by King Curtis. Wearing a, strategically wearing a white t-shirt. There's no mercy.
This is war.
Yeah, no quarter given, says Layton. Well, this is pretty cool because this is such a legendary feud, like I said earlier, but there's no footage really besides this Australia stuff. All the territories in the States that they ran it, as far as I know, there's no footage. Maybe Detroit, but definitely not Stampede. Curtis fighting blindly, coming back from the floor and ripping into the for the protection of Mark Lewin. Referee sold that suplex like he's dead. Chief Billy White Wolf and the Golden Greek Spiros Arion. Okay, we got Spiros Arion and Billy White Wolf were the two that are attending to the referee.
Hell, I thought this war was ended! I thought this war was over! But it's a lie! It's war and I'm declaring it! We're gonna go back into a war! We're gonna get him and slice him!
This is
the war was
stuff.
Over, but it's not.
No.
I almost lost that eye! And Lewin almost
awesome.
Lost half of his...
Okay, so based on that promo by Lewin, the feud had been already raging for quite a while. Jesus.
This is just the first of the many...
You know, a lot of people say Abdullah had the most scarred forehead, but I think King Curtis actually had more scars than Abdullah, if it's possible.
Represent the master.
Definitely wider on the forehead, takes up a lot more area.
Oh, God.
Maybe not as deep.
It's just insane.
We destroy Big Bad John and we will destroy them! We will!
Jesus.
Serious Iakea stuff. Said he just almost lost his eye and Lewin almost lost half his face.
War and war is a nasty word. It's a strong word.
Yeah.
That's the only way to describe
that was cool.
Animals that we have there, big bad giant men. They're just animals.
Actually, I don't know if that was Layton. If that was, I think I was a different guy. Anyway, we'll pause it quickly. And our last look at 70s Australia is Ron Miller versus the NWA World Heavyweight Champion Harley Race. And I believe Ron Miller was, by this point, this is post Barnett as the promoter in Australia, and I believe Miller became, I don't think he was the full owner, but he was a part owner of the promotion. He was a native Australian, I'm pretty sure of that, and was, yeah, pushed as one of the top stars in the territory at this time. As, you know, someone who owns the territory will often do. But, I wish I knew more about the guy. I don't know anything beyond very basic details. But he's the man going against Harley Race here. I believe this is a non-title match. So we'll get into it. And we're going to have color for the first time and not color as far as blood, but we're going to see actual color footage here. And this is 77, 78 approximately. So we'll go 3, 2, 1, go.
Now, as we've been talking, I tried to look up Ron Miller. Oh, wow. They're on like the set of Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, exactly. Weekend update.
He's not fit enough. He's not severely injured, but he's certainly in no shape to go in there today and wrestle the world champion.
Well, Kevin Martin was to wrestle Harley Race today, and that is...
So Kevin Martin is injured. He is not ready to go.
Yes. And Ron Miller will be the emergency replacement, I guess, to go against the world champion.
So all of this footage is off of a DVD set.
Okay.
Rough, Tough, and Real, it's called. It's three DVDs, 30 matches.
Hmm.
On television right now. That's right. Ronnie Miller has thrown out a challenge now.
Yeah, and I think if you looked hard enough on YouTube, you could probably piece together the whole set. I know there's quite a bit uploaded.
Has given me permission to wrestle you, Harley Race, right now here on television.
Well, there you are. So that's
what are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
I'm not that stupid, you know. What are you talking about?
We've been blessed with some really good mic work in the Australian footage.
Miller out to challenge, and Harley's like, nah.
Yeah, well, that's like a typical NWA champion sort of attitude. He's like, no, I was prepared to wrestle the other guy. I'm not going to wrestle this guy. I'm not prepared for this guy.
Kevin Martin. It's not my fault. Kevin Mutton.
Mutton?
Yes. At least that's what Harley said.
Yeah. I don't know. Hopefully he's I'm not wrestling making fun of him.
Oh, crowd is irritated in the studio.
Yeah. And then they stick in a ringer on me. The race was so awesome. I was contracted to face Kevin Mutton, not Ron Miller.
He's gonna. Oh, Ron Miller was so soft spoken.
Yeah, I know. Harley Race, the current NWA World Champion. Well, here we go.
I'd like to take on her.
He refused to accept the match with Ronnie Miller, but after
impromptu match, folks. And being humiliated, not into wrestling
Miller. He's thrown his coat off. He's thrown his world championship belt off. Pretty decent quality video here.
Yep. Yeah, nothing wrong with that at all.
On television here in Australia, World Championship Wrestling, Miller and Race. Race hits the canvas. Ronnie Miller moves into action, picks up Race, a body slam, body press, the count of two. Boy, oh boy.
Harley's got to wrestle Jumbo Tsuruta in Japan and then this guy in Australia.
Yeah. In March and also just recently. Oh, that's great. I
mean, Kevin Mutton.
Hey, Kevin. And Harley Race back on the forearm. But the old 10 pounds of gold NWA title had all the flags of all the nations on it, and it was like Australia, Japan, and it was all true. He went to all those countries. No, it's I don't think he made a ton of tours of Australia, but definitely went to Japan quite a lot.
World champion backing away from the Australian champ. The crowd won more. The referee said, wrestle on. Ronnie Miller moves in. And there's that high knee.
Oh, there we go.
I haven't seen too much of Harley in the 70s. Seen a ton in the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good Harley from the 70s out there. Some matches against Baba, late 70s, those are really good. There's not a ton of footage. He was all over the place. There's a lot of Florida sort of clip stuff out there. But yeah, I mean, he raced in the 60s. He had such a great run with Larry Hennig as tag champs. That's something I'd die to see. And then had a great 70s.
champ with the count of four being put on.
And there's a lot of good early 80s Harley Race, that's for sure.
Yeah.
With that forward open up again.
Both guys dumped over the top rope.
Moving up onto the top. Harley going for one of his famous high spots.
And the count of two.
Saw that one coming a mile away.
Yeah.
So the local star gets a pin on the world champion. Of course, not a title match. But that's...
And even if it...
Yeah.
Even if it was, they both went over the top rope, so...
Yeah. But that's booking 101 for the NWA champion coming into a territory would make the local star look on his on the same level, look great. And then, look at the crowd.
Embraced by the fans.
Harley Race moves
outside the ring. The police having to come and break it up.
Well, there it is on World Championship. And there you go. You can build, or you can have a huge match at one of their larger arenas where the title's actually on the line. And hopefully they drew a decent house because of this match. I've seen way better rollovers on the crossbody before. That was very painfully obvious that Harley pulled him over. But oh well.
There's still a couple of minutes here.
Yeah. I think we got a... I think this is a kind of a somewhat well-known little bit here with Harley. I'm pretty sure I've seen at least this part before where he goes off on him.
I told you, Miller, it was nothing but an out-and-out conspiracy. I've known you. I respected you. I respect your ability in the ring till now. You Pearl Harbor. I can't say.
I can't say. Sure you can. It's Australia. Say whatever you want. But
I will pin you, didn't I? Bloody will pin you.
It's going to come down to you, me. It's coming down to where... Whatever I gotta do, I'm gonna beat you. I've come over here twice. I've represented the world of wrestling. I have done it with the utmost respect for wrestling. Until now, Miller, I'm coming back. And when I get back, I'm gonna hurt you. I'm gonna hurt you somehow.
If I somehow.
That way, fine. You have insulted the world heavyweight champion.
Wow. That's awesome. What a great expression by this guy. It's like, my God. Yank is bleeding crazy.
He's just pacing.
Oh, that was
great.
That was fun stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's not, we didn't see a classic match or anything, but those were three very enjoyable videos. And yeah, and our blood streak continues. We've seen almost every match we've watched has had blood in it. It's probably like 75% or so.
Harley's was inadvertent there. He looked like he was cut open for something previously.
Oh, yeah. No, he definitely had a Band-Aid and the night before or whatever. But if the previous match with Lewin and Iakea were both wearing crimson masks by the end. So that's cool. It's good to keep that streak going. Another week, where the besides international wrestling, our specialty is his blood so far. We could almost change the name to International House of Combat and Blood. But anyway, what were your thoughts on what we just watched, Steve?
Oh, so I like watching TV from different places to see, because you're not just seeing the match, you're seeing the setup, you're seeing the promos, which is half the fun.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can see where this is going pretty easily. Like you said, okay, they're gonna pop a house somewhere with the rematch for this, and it's going to be not so much a couple punches and a little reversal off of something. It's going to be a fight. And yeah. I'm disturbed by Big Bad John. I don't like him. I don't like his little Darth Vader helmet. And it's interesting. I wouldn't mind watching this whole DVD set.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I mean, I watched a few of the shorter videos. I know before there's one where it's a cage match with a bunch of the guys like Lewin and Abby and Ayakea. But it's only like 4 or 5 minutes in length. That's one I definitely remember watching. But yeah, like we got, like I said, we didn't have classic matches, but we had some pretty good mic work there with Harley and with Lewin and Ayakea and Big Bad John and Leighton on commentary was good too. So, yeah, it was a nice little snippet. I mean, not everything has to be five-star matches, great matches. There's so much great wrestling that is just these moments, you know, the angles in the TV studio, the promos, all that stuff. That's I love that stuff. So, yeah, I think if we looked into it, we'd find some more gems amongst the videos, the Australian videos.
Yeah, really trying to make it seem like it was a real fight, that these were real blood wars.
Yeah.
And the crowd getting into it. There's only a couple hundred people in the crowd at the most. Pretty wide mix of gender, too.
Yep. Yeah, and then the Harley match was from a total TV studio set that, there was maybe 50 people there at most. But, yeah, it was big time. Big business at that time in Australia. And yeah, that stuff's fun.
Ayakea, quite the sex symbol, apparently.
God. I know, it's funny that he was one of the baby faces, because I think of him almost exclusively as a heel. I know at different points in his career he was a baby face, but yeah, he just screams heel by the look of him. Mark Lewin would go back and forth between babyface and heel, you know, every few years pretty much, and actually drew well both as a babyface and a heel. Lewin's one of the more underrated wrestling stars in history. There's not much footage of him in his prime, but if you look at the results and look at the house figures, he was a draw everywhere he went for several decades. Like, he started when he was still a teenager and was main eventing, but working high on the card in Madison Square Garden in a tag team with Don Curtis in the mid to late 50s. And from there, he was a star everywhere he went until the early 80s. So he's always a guy I've been interested in just based on his star power. But yeah, there's just not much footage. And King Curtis was a huge star too, in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, guys just got out that just were winding down in the major part of the career as the big North American TV promotions took off. So there wasn't much of them available.
No, it wasn't until the late 70s that VCRs started to become common and fans were taping stuff. I mean, IKEA, I believe, didn't wrestle after 1979. He was done before the 80s even started. So yeah, there's hardly anything to judge him by. So yeah, that was fun. So next up now, I mean, talking about five-star matches and great matches, we're going to be seeing something that I'm not sure, you know, how great it is, but I'm pretty sure this is going to be a great match. I think I've seen this before, but it was many, many years ago, and I don't recall much about it. But this is Harley Race versus Jumbo Tsuruta. The date, I believe, let's see if it's here. Yes, June 11th,
1977, so this may have been from the same time period as the previous Harley match with Ron Miller from Australia, within a year at the most anyway. And Harley, of course, NWA champion here, as he was in the Australian match. And Jumbo Tsuruta at this time was about 4 years into his career. And he was a star right from the get-go, Tsuruta. He was a Olympian and was pushed immediately. Like, his debut in Japan was covered as like a big sporting story. And he was teaming with Baba and a main eventer right from the get-go. And he turned out to be an all-time great wrestler, of course. And in 77, he was pretty damn good. One match that I definitely remember seeing years ago that was a great match was Tsuruta against Terry Funk from 1976, when Terry Funk was the NWA champion. And that's a great match. And Tsuruta is awesome in that. And that one is easily available on YouTube, or at least it used to be. So that's one I definitely recommend. So this one, this will be interesting. Yeah. Steve, have you seen this match before?
I might have at some point, but I don't recall. So
yeah,
I am excited to hit the countdown and play it.
Yeah, there's a lot of Harley versus Jumbo matches on YouTube. That's for sure. From all different years, late 70s, early 80s. But I think this is the one, it's kind of the consensus best Harley Jumbo match. So let's get into it. Do the countdown. 3, 2, 1, go. Here we go. Ceremony, pre-match. Oh, and in a bit of a coincidence, that's Jim Barnett who's giving the speech. The promoter of World Championship Wrestling in Australia in the 60s and early 70s. And wow, Harley, this may be the same tour, because that's like the same jacket from Australia. And Harley looks almost identical to the Australian footage.
You're not supposed to give that away. We could have said that this was planned, completely planned.
Yeah, that's funny. No, yeah, I mean, yeah, it wasn't.
Oh, there's no doubt. He's got the same cut
yes.
above his left eye.
Yeah, so this is probably after the match in Australia, because it looks like it's healing now. Interesting. So this is probably from the same tour that Harley was on. That's great.
Man, yeah, we're good.
Wow. Jumbo so young. Full head of hair. Let's see if we can
record. And Miller was the heavyweight champion in Australia at the time of that match.
Oh, okay, cool.
And he was the champ from January 76 until they folded in 78.
Yeah, well, like I said, it pays to be the owner of the promotion.
Yep.
I mean, he looked fine. I mean, I can't judge a wrestler on a 5-minute match, but yeah, he
against
looked
Harley Race. No
against
less.
Harley Race, of course, but he looked perfectly fine in what we saw. Oh, Destroyer's at ringside for Jumbo.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't look like Harley has anybody in his corner, but maybe there's somebody.
Harley Race, really underrated manager, too. Not someone who generally gets talked about.
No, not at all.
In terms of their managerial skills, but with Vader, yeah.
No, because I think it happened after the peak of the manager era, and also it happened in WCW, which that was, you know, at a time when they did a lot of good, that's for sure. There was a lot of bad, but there was a lot of good. And yeah, it just doesn't get talked about. I mean, the big picture you know, history of the of WCW that gets talked about is, of course, the NWO era.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the early 90s stuff is kind of unknown to a lot of wrestling fans, I think. But no, Harley was great. He bumped like a madman, as a good manager should.
Jumping arm drag.
Nice.
Yeah, when you had a guy like Vader that he was managing as well, you need someone to talk for the guy that grunts.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he had a little bit of a stable there at one point. You're totally right. It is totally underrated and almost forgotten, his run as a manager. But here he's so young. He would have been in his 30s at this point, Harley, which is crazy to think, but he was. He actually wasn't that old when he stopped wrestling full-time, you know, relative to wrestling, how some wrestlers, how long they go. I think he was only 44, 45. But he definitely seemed a lot older when he was the king. There's a famous story of when he was not even in the WWF at the time. He was still kind of just an NWA guy. This was around 85. And they were running a show, the NWA promotion, in the same city as the WWF, I think the same night. And someone from the WWF called the athletic commission or whatever and said, well, you can't let the NWA guys run a show because Harley's 58 years old or something like that. But in actuality, he was only 42 at the time.
Classy.
Yeah, I know. But it was like, well, they'll believe that someone like Harley's 58.
Yeah. A little bit of a feeling out process here after Tsuruta had control.
Yeah. But, I mean, He's going to have a lot of suplexes. There'll probably be a random pile driver out of nowhere at some point. Headbutts. Harley can be a bit of a polarizing wrestler for a lot of fans. A lot of people think he was too concerned with high spots and not great with psychology. You know, he's often considered like the first spot monkey, as strange as that may sound.
Yeah.
And it changed the style of the NWA champion. You know, he wasn't, but that's exaggerated. A lot of the same criticisms are levied at Ric Flair when he was the NWA champion. And if you actually watch a lot of the matches, especially sort of random stuff from Japan, you know, they'll work the mat, they'll work a different style, and they definitely weren't just spot monkeys. But I think maybe as Harley got older, he relied more just on the spots, but here he was a bit different.
Well, and again, it's seeing footage of somebody later in their career.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Seeing them having to adapt.
Yeah. But I mean, for me, Harley was one of the most believable wrestlers ever. Yeah, as far as you thought he was, you know, a total badass, somebody that was totally believable as the world champion, as the best wrestler. Just his name, Harley Race. I mean, that just always sounded so important. It's crazy that was his real name, too. It wasn't a gimmick name. But yeah, I've come to really appreciate Harley a lot in the last few years as an all-time great.
Well, he fit right in with that profile, those matches that we saw in Australia with those guys being very similar body types and style.
Mm-hmm.
They'd drag out fights and then hopping in here with Jumbo. And, you know, so far this is a traditional Japanese heavyweight style main event.
Yep. Yeah, I think this will be one that builds up slowly and it'll be pretty hot in the closing stretch. But yeah, I mean, and Harley was a legit tough guy, badass, smoked who knows how many packs of cigarettes a day and drank a ton of beer. Yeah, a lot of interesting stories about him outside the ring.
Isn't there a story of him at a convention in a wheelchair, like starting a fight with someone?
Oh, probably. Yeah, that sounds about right. Crazy. Yeah, and he's got a slightly different look here. A lot less hair. Like the typical or the classic Harley look is the more of the almost an afro of hair, and then the thick mutton chop sideburns with the mustache combo. Here he's definitely got a lot less hair, and he's also a lot leaner too.
All right, quick Google search. Harley Race got into a fight with Vader at the Legends of Ring convention. This is in 2012. Race ended up punching Vader in the face after Vader became belligerent. Vader attempted to punch Race back. Race was in a motorized scooter and accidentally struck a worker instead.
Oh my God. Jeez.
They worked it out. They worked it out with words afterward, so that's good.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder what happened, why they had a falling out.
Harley stiffed him on a payday in 93 or something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure maybe alcohol was involved in the fight, but who knows? Oh, Jesus, Harley, that's crazy. Nice.
Big knee.
Yeah, big high knee. Harley's reeling a bit. Oh, number two. That looked awesome. Big butterfly suplex. Oh, wow.
Got it.
Yeah. I forgot it's 2 out of 3 falls.
Yeah, that just surprised me too.
But yeah, that was nice. 2 high knees and a big suplex. Yeah, that's a 3 count. That's a pin. Okay, and I don't know if there was a cut there or what. We're going straight into the second fall.
Yeah, I feel like there was a shortcut.
There must have been, because I'm pretty sure Japan had not the full breaks where guys went back to the dressing room, but they definitely had a few minutes in between falls.
Although it would have been great to see Harley no-sell.
Yeah.
Oh, shoulder breaker.
He's shoulder breaker. Wow. Harley's starting to dole out the bombs now, I think. Yep. Oh. Why not? Only a 2? Yeah.
Barely a 2.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think Harley ever pinned anybody with a pile driver. I could be wrong. But now he's just going, oh, reverse by Suda, though. It's funny because Harley's finishing maneuver actually was just a vertical suplex. But he's throwing out pile drivers and huge gut-wrench suplexes. But no, just the straight vertical was enough. Oof, big headbutt. Mm.
Those famous vicious knees.
It looks so, it's so good.
Yeah. Yeah, he was the master of the knee drop. Measuring him. Lots of pinfalls for pinfall attempts for a 70s match.
Yeah, in Japan, no less.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Harley was the prototypical modern worker. High spots and near falls.
Gotta work the hard cam.
Yeah. Slow things down now for a bit.
I thought for a second he was going to win the second fall in quick fashion.
Yeah, I did too. I bid actually on the shoulder breaker. I was like, well, yeah, this is the 70s. That's got to be a finish. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what does. I'm assuming he'll get a fall on Tsuruta, but maybe not. Well, no, he has to, because this isn't going to go 60, so something's got to happen.
So we can't get haircuts, you know, I don't know about how it is
no.
by you, but can't get haircuts at all. I'm out of razors, so I'm thinking that... those mutton chops.
Why not?
Might be something in 2020.
Yeah, that's going to be the style for the decade will be mutton chops and mustaches and long hair. It'll be the 70s all over again just because you can't go to a barber.
Oof. Saw someone give their husband essentially a bowl cut.
Yeah.
Like, I cut my husband's hair. Oh, how does it look?
Yeah, I'm going to just let it go. I mean, I've often had long hair at different points in my life, so it's not like I'm dying to get my hair cut or anything. It's not too long. It was actually, for me, it was quite short before all this went down, so I've got a good few months before I look like a total hippie.
Yeah, a lot more. It's an interesting structure to this match.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the longer Japanese matches these days have a lot more mat work in the beginning.
Right.
You know, sometimes the real long ones, even a good 10, 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of people complain that that's just wasted time. Oh, what they do in the first 15 minutes doesn't matter. I mean, I think that's a bit of an exaggerated opinion.
If you're doing it right, it matters.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as it makes sense and you want to have callbacks later in the match to what you did in the first 10 minutes, that's always good.
It looks like he's really wrenching in that hammerlock.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. Bad view, not
probably
so much.
Not even. Yeah. Yeah, you can give the WWE. You know, you could kind of put down their wrestling at angles, but you can't deny their production.
No, well, yeah, of course. I mean, that's their calling card now. It's they make it look great, but yeah. There's no substance to it.
Yeah, I mean, you had Harley selling masterfully, sweat dripping off his face, but you can only see Jumbo's shoe and a bit of Harley's chin.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Jumbo's just pouring sweat.
He was a couple minutes in.
Yeah.
I love the yellow polo of the ref.
Yeah. Canary yellow. It looks like Harley's cut's threatening to come open.
Just from grinding the mat, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, that's as Peter Winston on Greetings from Allentown says, that was the SD Jones Memorial mischarge into the corner. Cardinal mistake for a ring veteran. Like, well, I guess Jumbo wasn't a veteran so much at this point, but still. Oh, we're going with an Indian deathlock. This is probably the second fall here. Yep.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's over. No, he's still in there. This is a total move lost to time. Nobody does the Indian deathlock anymore.
Yeah.
I've always thought it was cool looking, though.
I feel like Triple H did it once.
Yeah, but he didn't stick with it. Oh, it's over. Second fall goes to Harley Race via submission. Interesting. Indian deathlock. I didn't know Harley had that in his arsenal, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he would do the inverted Indian deathlock, Triple H.
Yeah.
Because I know he was a huge Harley fan, or is a huge Harley fan.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a time when he was very actively, you know, cosplaying, if you want to say, Harley with the even the sideburns mustache look.
Plus long hair.
Yeah, longer hair. And yeah, of course he was the big champ at that time. The bump that he does over the top rope, you know, where he hooks his arm on that top rope, that's a signature Harley bump. Actually, now that I think of it, I think Harley actually won the NWA title from Terry Funk in Toronto with the Indian Deathlock. So, yeah, it was something that he used at this time. But 80s Harley, I don't recall using the Indian Deathlock much for whatever reason.
Going right back to the leg.
Yep. We'll see how this plays out. We got about 6 minutes of time on the video left. Huge gut wrench.
Yeah, they just switch gears so you can almost see it.
Mm-hmm.
A couple big strikes that we haven't seen yet. And
yeah. Yeah, I think things are going to be pretty hot from now on. That was a great dropkick, too.
Huge height.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jumbo was very tall. Oh, whiffed on that one, though.
Have you ever been to Japan?
No, I haven't. That's another country. That's actually more so than Australia. A country I'd love
to. Yeah, same here.
Yeah, love to go just for a completely different experience. I take it you haven't been either?
No, that's one of my number one dreams.
Yeah.
It will happen. It will happen at some point.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'll get there too. I've been to Europe several times. And but other than that, as far as like real far distance, that's about it.
Yeah, And pretty much, yeah, only Latin America, a lot of Central Mexico and Central America.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've been to Mexico. I've been to the States just a few times in my life, actually. But that's not far from where I am, of course. But yeah, I guess Malta in Europe would be the furthest I've traveled. That's getting close to Africa, actually, in the Mediterranean Sea.
It's a weird pace.
Mm-hmm.
back with strikes and suplexes, and
yeah,
front face lock and abdominal stretch. Although he's working this like it could be a finisher.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of a typical Harley match in a lot of ways, with just a lot of nobody in on top for long, just a lot of bombs.
Harley, didn't you learn your lesson against Ron Miller?
An ad played on my video, so I'm a touch behind you right now. Okay. Yeah, that was, speaking of Flair influence, that was a Flair influence spot. Oh, getting to the home stretch now.
I have no idea how this finishes.
No, got about 2 minutes or so left. Can't be a time limit draw. That's the one certainty.
Oh.
Yeah, I just saw Jumbo miss the knee. Small package. No, that's it, right? Which, of course, you guys saw before I did, but whatever.
Yes. I tried to pause it a little bit.
Yeah. There's just catch up. Nothing you can do. Stupid ad out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Well, that was actually kind of shades of that Saruta Terry Funk match from the previous year that I was talking about, where the finish for that was Jumbo. I think he... Yeah, no, he was hot-shotted into the top rope. He was diving for a body press, and Funk dropped him on the top rope, and then he was pinned directly after that. So that was somewhat of a similar finish, with Jumbo missing a move and hitting the ropes.
Giant trophy.
Yeah. I've never understood the randomness of the trophies presented in Japan at this time. seemingly random from my perspective, because I don't think this was a tournament final or anything, but I think it's almost like the NWA champion in Japan also has that trophy, it seems like, in addition to his belt, because it seems to always be presented to the NWA champion. So it's like a neat little Japanese touch to the whole world champion thing. Well, yeah, that was a pretty good match. It felt like it could have had, an extra gear to it. One more gear up to really take it into great match territory. But it was very enjoyable nonetheless.
Yeah, Yeah, it's definitely enjoyable. The big gear switch seemed to happen in the middle of the match. There was a bit of a gear switch a few minutes in when for the first fall, and then in the second fall, after that started, Harley started throwing in the pile driver and the shoulder breaker. I was not expecting a change of body slams with less than a minute to go.
Mm-hmm. It was a fun match. Like I said, it was very much a typical Harley performance with the random bombs throughout. The mat work was pretty ordinary at times, but I think, Harley's mat work when he was in charge was kind of dull with the front face lock and all that, but Jumbo was pretty good on the mat, and it was a pretty good match. Definitely, I'll have to see some of their other matches, how they compare. If this one's considered the best of them all, I don't know. Some of the other ones may be not so great, but we'll see. Any closing thoughts on that match or anything else, Steve?
No, I'm intrigued a little bit by some of this Mark Lewin, Big Bad Sean is a terrible name. war stuff, and kind of intrigued by where that's going. I wouldn't mind looking at that again. Good reminder to check out a lot of Harley Race's older stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Give the Australian footage a go. It's the only thing is it's not hard, or it's not easy to understand like the chronology of all the matches based on just the YouTube uploads. I'm not sure how easy it is to like follow one match to the next, but there's definitely more footage of the armies and the war stuff out there. So yeah, I would check that out. It's could be interesting.
And there are many Harley Jumbo matches on YouTube and Daily Motion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed that. I was surprised actually at the sheer amount. But I mean, Harley was NWA champion for a long time, and Jumbo was always. He would always challenge the NWA champion when they came to Japan. So, yeah, that's one reason. I think there's even several matches post-Harley as NWA champion against Jumbo from, like, 84, 85, and even right before Harley went to the WWF to become the king. There may even be a match from 86 in Japan between them, which is quite late, and almost a decade after the match we just watched, so that one could be interesting to watch as a comparison. Should maybe do that one eventually.
78, couple 80, couple 82 that I'm seeing.
Yeah, I may be wrong, but I could have sworn I stumbled upon one that was like 85, 86, and I remember thinking, "Ooh, wow, that's late for Harley going to Japan." This was fun. The Australian footage was neat, and Harley and Jumbo didn't disappoint, that's for sure. I think next time we're going to look at another country that we haven't looked at before, and that's going to be Germany. I've come across a playlist just recently that has a ton of German matches from the late 80s and early 90s. And I just the other day, or yesterday, I guess it was, I was going through it to look for possibilities. And there's definitely some possibilities. And there's some really, most of the matches are really long, you know, half an hour, 40 minutes even. So that'll be interesting. And then there's a match between Bull Power, which is Big Van Vader, against Tatsumi Fujinami from Germany, that we've had in our ideas playlist for a while. So I think we'll watch that one for sure, and then we'll find one of German match from the late 80s, early 90s from that playlist for next time. And Australia's obscure to me. Germany's perhaps even more obscure. I don't know if I've seen a full match from
from a German promotion ever.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know. You have, Steve?
I've seen more current from like the WXW promotion. I've seen some stuff here and there, like the Daniel Bryan, Brian Danielson, I think some El Generico, and then like stuff like Walter, David Starr, Timothy Thatcher, like those guys I've seen. Yeah, not a lot. I'm not an expert by any means. I think I watched one of their work shoot style tournaments once, which was interesting, kind of like a rings type matches or a battle sport. Like,
yeah, no, they have an interesting history. No, I mean, I know WXW has been a big deal and I love a lot of those guys, but no, I haven't. I haven't watched any of those matches. Yeah, so this will be something different. And yeah, and so that's about it for today. Steve, how's things going with the main event on Place to Be Nation?
Well, I'm laughing because I was getting a message as we were talking about it, because we are taping this week, and because there's not much current wrestling going on, we're having to watch some of this empty arena stuff, and we are Nate Milton, our co-host, has always been a big Impact guy, so I've been watching TNA Rebellion the last couple of nights, or Impact Rebellion. Interesting. It's interesting. I think some of the matches would be better in front of a crowd. I think some of them were not good at all, and you had Ken Shamrock and Sami Callihan wrestle in a main event where it was half in a ring and half like your kind of broken Matt Hardy boneyard type match. It was not good. So that's the kind of stuff you can look forward to in the main event.
That's too bad. I do like Sami Callihan a lot. I think he's one of the great modern heels.
He is really good.
It's hit and miss. The movie style production, it's definitely hit and miss. But I think we're going to see quite a lot of that probably going forward.
I have no problem. I think we mentioned this last time. I have no problem with them trying it and companies coming up with unique ways to show wrestling. So I'm actually planning on watching Money in the Bank because they're going to do two Money in the Bank matches, men and women simultaneously from the WWE headquarters. I don't know if you've heard about this.
I have. So they're going to do them simultaneously. What's like a split screen type deal?
I don't know. I'm picturing like the old Kota Ibushi DDT apartment wrestling when he's going through. I don't know if you've seen that one either. It's an all-timer. He goes into different apartments and finds various wacky scenes. He's trying to get to the landlord, who's a slumlord.
That sounds awesome. We may have to watch that eventually. I guess it makes sense to do both at the same time, because once you see one, you wouldn't want to do the exact same thing just right afterwards, right? So interesting.
I mean, exactly. Interesting is a good way. So I'm going to check that out, because at least, you know, if it could be a train wreck, it might be interesting. There's some decent people in it. There's some horrible people in it. So
who knows? We'll see. I haven't watched anything from WrestleMania, so I don't know if I'll be tempted to get into this. I'm on a pretty low point in my WWE fandom right now. But yeah, I mean, they gotta do something, I guess. If they're gonna run shows, you can't just do the regular matches. You gotta think outside the box, so to speak. Alright, well, my usual plugs are, you know, WorldCast. We're strong. We're into 1984 now. We've got some interesting stuff happening in the territory. Some feuds are still red hot. And I've kind of put a pause on the greatness of Randy Savage because the feed was just, there was too many shows. And it was just, so I thought, I don't need to be on like three different podcasts every week. So I'll bring that one back when I feel the time is right. So anyway,
there you go.
All right. Well, it was fun. once again to do this, Steve, and we'll do
it. Of course.
Yeah, do it again next time from Deutschland. Good night, everybody.